big horse business. He had a big stable buying and selling of horses, so he was busy actually in the week to where he couldn't be interrupted at different times. So the Tourette's would be from here on top of the hill and past the hill, and they would come from all the towns, and it would be all day long. And the fee was always exactly one dime, regardless of what was the patient's.
Does the family have any records of hers as a doctor?
We had all the birth certificates and that birth, but they're all recorded under her name in Austin and wherever they record them, all the children, but they're not any longer here.
For that. All right, you were telling us that you used to sit on your grandfather's lap and he told you a lot of stories. So he lived with your family for many years. And this house was his home, Ed Sheerhart and Anna, this house we're in. And then Anna died from a surgical operation. And so he lived then many years after she died, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you lived here in his house.
Yeah.
And he lived with you. So Ethel was his oldest grandchild here, huh?
Yeah.
And she listened to many stories. Well, Ethel, you want to tell us maybe a couple of the most interesting things your grandfather told you about his freighting experiences?
On one of their trips, they had a sad trip because they lost two of their men, one by accident, was shot by an army officer thinking it was a polar bear. He was unfamiliar to these parts. And the reason for this was because the camping was at a river and he was in the process of soaking his hair, which of course looked white. And this was a Grunewald boy, and another brother was with this train. So they had a duty to tell the sisters when they got here that both the brothers were buried along the way. The second brother became very homesick when this happened, and so after a short time they decided to send the rider home so the boy could get home long before the train would get home. But that cheered him a bit, but while lacing his shoes he just dropped over dead the day that they were already had prepared to send them on their way. One great pleasure was always attending the Old Trail Drivers Association at the San Pedro Park in San Antonio, where Grandfather was the only man present that could recognize the picture of Chief Geronimo. And when asked how he recognized this chief, he said, "I knew him well." And Grandfather was one of the civilian scouts when the Army rounded up the last roundup of the Indians in Mexico, and three big chiefs were brought in at the time, each in one wagon, tied at the wrists, and a wire across the wagon, but each driver always had a pistol, wore a pistol. One Indian chief chewed his own hand off at the wrist, got the pistol, and did not know how to use a gun, so was trying to find how to use it, intending to kill the driver, so he had to be mercifully shot because it was too dangerous. They could not apprehend him hand-to-hand.
Now, how long was your grandfather in the freighting business?
25 years.
And some of the people that also were freighters that were friends of his were?
Mr. Sondland and his father Nicholas Nicholas had only two wagons, which was considered very small, with Mr. Sondland, and he was hauling rocks for the church. They were getting rocks for the foundation of the church. They might have worked several years to get some rocks there. I don't know, because it was, he worked all day, and at night he got cholera, became ill, and before daylight he was dead. That left the family, the mother, pregnant 7 months. So they held a family meeting, and they decided that Joe and Ed were going to support the family, and they voted and elected that Sebastian would remain at home, carry on with the dairy business, act as a father and a counselor to all the family, which he did. And this went on, and always they brought all the money home to the mother on all the trips. They didn't save, use any money. The whole purpose was to help support the family, which they acquired,
they had quite a large train.
So he said that once they were waterbound so long, so many weeks, and in the snow and ice, that they had to use all the money up to buy grain, and they charged them $2 a bushel to keep the mules from freezing and starving. They come home with exactly one flat dime in cash. He said, "Ethelene, do you know when Christmas is Christmas? Two times in all these years, we drove very fast, many miles on one day, because that was Christmas Eve. And we were on top of the hill here, and it was Christmas Eve when we got into Castorville."
Okay. The Shearharts have a lot of names in this town. You know, a lot of people say, you know, I don't know, what kind of a name do we have, Ethel?
I tell you, I have known the Shearharts family a long time. I would not say they're mean people. I'd say they're real brave people. I think that has become because they were just boys when they had to be men. They had, at such a young age, faced responsibility.
But Miss Shearhart was saying, when they had the first reunion, everybody in town predicted, well, if all these nine boys get together,
They'll be fighting. But they showed them. There was no cross words said that day.
It was a happy occasion, yes. There were about 150 people there, I think, at that reunion.
Of course, I wasn't in the family.
You weren't?
The first time. No, they spoke in 1910, and we married in 1914.
Oh.
So I didn't belong to that reunion yet. Grandpa said he and son Laban, when the first windows were brought to the church, they went to Victoria to pick them up. A trip to Victoria takes 3 weeks, a short trip, and not a money trip. A short trip is always where you don't make much money.
Right.
6 months, yeah. All right. A year is better. They got to the church, you know, were gone 3 weeks, and very fragile frame, the glass window. So he noticed the priest walking up and down. He noticed he'd been talking to Mr. Son Laban. And then, of course, he didn't know what the priest was talking about, so finally the priest came over to me. And so he had told how kind of Mr. Son Laban I have spoken with him, and he said, "For the church, I will haul for half price." I was so mad at that son. he said, "I was just so mad at Sam Laban, you know." And then the priest said, "Now, Mr. Shearhart, what will you do for the church?" He said, "Half fire for the church, I've charged not a cent for my freight."
Okay. Now, you were going to tell us something else about the freighting business that he was in.
Well, how it was, the hazards. Mm-hmm. They don't know how hazardous this was. You see, there was no rivers, no bridges, or nothing. And they had to cross all the wagons, you see. And when they crossed the Devil's River one time, they always had the milk cows tied behind the wagon. a whirl caught it and the cow went down and they never did see that cow anymore.
Mm-hmm.
In the Devil's River.
So they had to take their milk cow along with them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Say that.
As I said before, they left Sebastian to raise to manage the family. That meant Sebastian never could go out and work and earn any money.
Now we're talking about when Nicholas Shearhart died in 66.
No, when the boys were taking care of the family.
Yeah, but Nicholas had died.
Yes.
Okay.
So one day, him and Joe had talked it over, and then they talked to Mother. Says, Mother, we noticed that Sebastian has a girl, and he's growing, he's a man now, and he'll need to think of getting married. But he doesn't have any money, so he can't marry, and he can't go and work. So now, when we come home, after this year, Mother, there'll be not a cent for you. All the money will be for Sebastian. And then we will tell him, now marry your girl. And Sebastian said he had noticed that always Mother was making quilts. She was always making quilts. And he would ask her, so he said, well, she needed quilts. So she had always been busy making quilts, and there was enough money. So all the land that he owned, where the Medina Dam now is, he bought his home. At weddings, it was a European custom. My grandmother introduced it.
You talk about Anna Stepanek?
Yes.
Stepanek now.
She would, at the dinner table, sneak under the table, remove one of the garters of the bride, and there would be a party afterwards, a dance if somebody had music, and they would dance. And you would have to pay, you could pay whatever you wanted, but every man certainly wanted a ticket. And she counted all the men, and she approached each one, and she cut the garter in that many pieces. That was presented to the bride and groom, and that's what they bought their furniture out of.
I don't quite understand that.
Well, you see,
part of that garter,
give a dollar, you give a dollar,
oh,
you give
$5,
or you give $10, whatever you give. Then she pinned a piece of the bride's garter.
I see,
And
every man
had, that's how far back this goes, uh-huh. Every man had, and then whatever money, then they bought the furniture uh-huh. out of that.
I see.
Well, at that time she was a Shearhart. I was up there when I was a young girl, when Nan Balker was married to Uncle Robert, where she still is. And mm-hmm. so there was a bedspread, hand-crocheted bedspread on the bed. And then Grandma Bain said, oh, you know, your grandmother made that bedspread. I said, no, I didn't know that. Then she told me the story about this bedspread. She said she went all over the country. First she made it, then she took it in her buggy, and she went all over, all the people that belonged to this church, and she would stop, and she would sell a ticket for a dollar. Okay, the women didn't have no business spending money, so they had to wait for the husband. But she wouldn't leave, said, you can afford a dollar for the church. So it got to where she was there for dinner if the husband was in the field. Okay, suppose he was gone all day, she was there for supper. So they said, here's a dollar if Miss Shearhart comes. Buy a ticket or we have her for two meals. She isn't leaving till we buy. And the river came down and the people on that side couldn't attend the celebration. So it was a few weeks afterwards she delivered it up to Ria Medina herself in the buggy again and said, here, you was the winner. Said she collected $300 for the bedspread.
So that was
ticket.
Sort of a raffle she
yeah,
just
yeah.
had on her own. And she made the bedspread for the
and
prize.
And might still be up there.
Well, I'll be. That's
yeah.
interesting.
So, you know,
I'm talking to Mrs. Della Schmidt. In Castorville also. Mrs. Schmidt, how old are you?
Only 87.
You're a spring chicken.
Yeah.
87. Now, your husband's name was?
Joseph Schmidt.
And how many children do you have?
Just two, a boy and a girl.
Catherine and
mm-hmm.
Joe.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Joe lives with you here.
Yeah.
Okay, what was your name before you married?
Adela Tundry.
Yeah. Okay, and did you come from a large family, or?
Oh, yeah, only 11.
11? Okay, where did the Tundry family live when you were young? Where did your family live?
Right over here, we had a house.
Anybody living in it now? Is it still standing?
It belongs to my daughter, but it's a...
Oh, that was the house you were brought up in?
No, a house was just an old-fashioned little house.
Uh-huh.
But after she married, by he wanted to come out here, and he moved that house from San Antonio.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
But now they live in San Antonio. And
uh-huh.
My sister, you know the one, Miss Cook, that died?
Uh-huh.
She was living over there.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, Mrs. Schmidt, I understand you were very active in the St. Louis celebrations. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the longest you back that you remember something about the celebrations?
Oh, as a little girl.
Okay, mm-hmm. Where were they held then?
The same place.
In Wernitz Gordon?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you remember about them? How did the women bring the food?
Oh, we had a good time. We worked together and, you know, we had a little kitchen, I guess like an hour, and we each one had to bring something, you know, and then
they put it on the table?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you have to pay to eat there?
No.
Everybody just bought the food and everybody just ate?
No, the rest of them had to pay for their meal.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. What did they usually use the money for that they made?
Oh, on the church and on the school, like uh-huh. now. Uh-huh.
Just whatever they needed
mm-hmm.
it for.
Huh? Yeah.
Okay,
And his sister got sick, and he couldn't get nobody from the parish. They came down and asked me, and I went there.
To work for him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for Father Lance?
And then, he used to hurrah me, you know, too. So I just told him. And we had a good time. I don't know, I worked there till, the girl got married and lived in California. She came home.
Uh-huh.
And so I quit there. Oh, yes, I used to work in the parish.
Uh-huh. How did you go to communion with, about what year was that?
Oh, the Kitty.
Father Kitty. Mm-hmm. And what year do you remember?
Well, I wouldn't remember, but I was four, and then I come. Then my sister-in-law was standing on the corner already there by
Lenore?
Isn't he the dentist or what, that's sleeping at home?
Yes.
Yeah, there. And when I got there, my sister-in-law, who was it? I said, I don't know. Maybe it was this and this. I said, well, I don't know. Ask me, I wasn't there. But I couldn't tell. But up on this day, I have never told nobody.
Before the stained glass windows were in the church, what kind of windows were in there?
Just small ones.
Small paned mm-hmm. with no stained glass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And was the whole church the same?
I think it was the same, yeah.
Uh-huh. I thought, now, how do you remember what age you were when this was done?
Oh, no, that's...
I mean, were you a little girl?
Uh-huh. I guess I was pretty young. Going to school, I guess, because I was the only one of the girls that had nerve enough to go up and get where the bells are.
Oh. Were they working on the church any time with the rock at that time?
I don't remember.
Like this little room, did you remember them building that?
I remember it, but I don't...
You don't remember how old
how
long ago?
I wouldn't know. Uh-huh. But I remember it. You know, they had steps, and they were a little shaky. I don't know, then we were just two that went up there.
Oh, you're talking about the end of the steeple?
Mm-hmm. And we weren't allowed to go, but we had to snoop up there. Anyhow, we were the only two.
I've never gone up there. Mm-hmm. Did you read the bells? Did you see them? The bells?
Yeah.
Did you ring them?
No. After the counter. When they started to haul the rocks, Mama was down with the baby. Mm-hmm. You know, in them days, when they christened the babies, they always danced. And Daddy came home, a rock had fell on his toe, and he couldn't put on a shoe. And then Mama always said, yes, and then the music came, and when they started to dance, he danced till he said, weep.
That sore toe didn't bother him a bit when he wanted to dance.
He always told us about that.
Today is March the 21st, 1973, Thursday, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Tilly. Today is Thursday, March the 21st, 1973, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Tilly Noonan. Mrs. Noonan, we have a picture here of the 1909 choir, and you've identified the girls on it and yourself. And would you tell us a little bit about this play?
Well, it seems that this princess was of a very prominent family, and she had wandered away from home. And this old man found her and gave her shelter. And, of course, all of the militia, I imagine they were called, went out looking for her. And they finally rescued her in this old man's hovel that he had built with all moss and sticks and what have you. And then they brought her in when the militia finally found her. They brought her in, and of course, it was quite complicated. They had to have doctors and nurses and whatnot. Mm. And this one lady, I don't remember what name she was given, but she was like the Lady Bountiful.
Oh.
And of course,
and
she
who played that part.
That was Kate Schmidt.
Uh-huh. And who was she the main lead of the play?
No, Mrs. Adolf Christilla's Marie Ream.
Uh-huh. She was the girl.
She was the girl, uh-huh. And Kate was my mother.
Uh-huh.
And she would take food, and of course they had servants. They were apparently very rich. And they had the servants, and everybody went together in the community and were taking care of her. I think they might have killed her by giving her too much care in the play. But it was quite exciting when they found her or located her in this place. Uh-huh.
Well, now, where was this play given? In what place?
The play was given in what is now the Red and White Store, upstairs. Mm-hmm. It was Mr. Philip Wernett's ballroom on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And this stage was up there, and all the moss was gathered up at Rio Medina for those big trees.
Uh-huh.
And it was very
well,
artistic.
Well, now, who directed
decorated.
This?
Sister Judoka. She was a music teacher, and she was the organist at St. Louis Church. Yes.
Oh, uh-huh.
She was the Sister of Divine Providence.
Uh-huh.
And she directed this play, although she was totally deaf. But if anyone made one slight mistake, she caught it.
She was
well, I imagine that she used her lip reading.
Uh-huh.
Because she was totally deaf.
Uh-huh.
And she carried this big horn. She carried this big horn, and you'd have to shout until the rafters rang to make her understand.
Oh,
but she would stand off away from the stage and look up there, and she could tell when we fluffed it. And in the end, the window behind the stage there, my mother had to lift me up in there, and I had a two-line German speech to make. And that was, I waved my arms, and after delivering the fruit to
uh-huh.
to this apparent princess, I imagine. And I said, Ich wollte dich wäre ein Vögelein. Ich möchte über die ganze Welt fliegen.
And you want to translate that?
Oh, I wish, it'll be a little rough.
Yeah.
I wish I were a bird. A small bird, I would fly over the whole world.
Oh. Okay. Now, did you all put on very many of these plays? Was this a regular thing?
They had some off and on, but it wasn't regular.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a regular thing. And why, or what the purpose was, I don't remember. See, that's nearly 65.
Yeah, well, you were quite small.
Yes, that's 66 years ago, and
yeah.
So I really don't know.
Well, how old are you?
Oh, how old am I? I was born the 5th day of September 1900. In September,
so
I'll be 73 years old.
You go with a year. Oh, your birthday's
yes.
in September.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes, I go with a year.
You and Herbert Tunder are the same age, and Clara Tunder?
Herbert's birthday is in June.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I know Clara
uh-huh.
was also born mm-hmm. within in 1900.
Mm-hmm.
What was your name, your maiden name?
Botter.
And your first name?
Well,
I know it is.
I was baptized Otilia Lenhardino, and they cut it short to Tilly, but I was known in Castroville as Ticky Botter. People really didn't know me as Tilly.
Oh, Ticky.
Mm-hmm. I was just Ticky Botter
uh-huh.
until, oh, I guess I was about 12 years old. When
uh-huh.
Well,
did you live in Castroville?
Oh, yes. I was born and raised here.
Mm-hmm. And your parents were?
My mother was born in San Antonio, but her mother was from Castroville.
Mm-hmm.
See, they had settled here in Castroville. And she was born in San Antonio, but then when she married, she was brought back as a baby. Uh-huh. And she grew up here, and so did my father. And
what were their names?
My mother's name was Mary Catherine Schmidt. And her father was killed by a team of oxen running away, and they cut his leg off with a plow. The plow shear went over his leg, and they cut his leg off.
Oh, and what was his name?
His name was Joseph Francis Schmidt.
Joseph
Francis. He was a brother to Franz Xaver Schmidt.
Uh-huh. Yes, I've read so much about
and, then Grandma Holt's house, now this is wrong. The little paper that I got the other day was written wrong. She was left a widow with three small children. Mary, who married Joseph Botter, and Teresa married Adolph Burkhardt. And Johanna Ida died when she was 5 years old of diphtheria. And they had no doctors here or anything, you know. And Mrs. Castro, the wife of Henry de Castro, went out and got a weed called, roughly translated, would be called nightshade. And she made a poultice of this and wrapped it around her throat. She rallied for a little while and then had a setback, and she died at the age of 5.
Oh.
And she was buried here in St. Louis Cemetery.
And what was her name now?
Her name was Johanna Ida Schmidt.
Oh, this is your mother's sister?
Mother's sister. There were three little girls. My grandmother was left with three little girls.
Oh, I see.
And then she married Mr. Holthouse, and she had 7 or 8 more children. I'm not sure.
Of
the thing. This paper that I have recently received says that she was preceded by 2 children, but there were 4 children.
It was
little Johanna and August and Clara Bediger, you know, Lucille's mother, and Mrs. Aunt Addie, we called her. Her name was Bernadine Holthouse Schmidt.
Uh-huh.
It was quite a complicated thing there.
I bet so.
See, she married a Schmidt, but she was no related to Otto Schmidt later on. Her first husband's name was Blake, but I can't remember his first name.
Uh-huh. Then your father was?
Was Joseph Botter, the third. Uh-huh. The third Joseph Botter.
The third
Botter.
Joseph Botter.
Mm-hmm.
And all direct descendants.
All direct descendants from the man who came to Castorville with the original colony. Uh-huh.
Now, the first Joseph Botter, was he the man that was so large?
Yes, he was a giant. And do you know that some of his children could have been, I imagine they could have been called dwarfs. They were about 5'3", something like that. And that was, one of them was August Botter, and the other one was Emily. No, no. I'm sorry, I just can't remember her name.
Yeah, well,
but she was Sister Mary Rose of the Divine Providence.
Oh, yes. Well, there were 2 sisters.
Yes, one of them
Mary
died.
Mary Pierre, and she died.
She died of
3 years after she went into the convent.
Mm-hmm.
She was only a sister.
And our Sister Mary Rose and August were little bitty short fellows.
Uh-huh. Well, Sister Mary Rose Botter was a sister for many years.
Oh, yes. She went in as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
She went. She was an apostle as a young girl.
Sister Medora told me that she used to catch a ride home with her when she was young and in the convent.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Sister Mary Rose is older. Mm-hmm. Well, now, the first Joseph Botter, was he the only Botter that came to this settlement?
That I don't know.
But do all the Botters from this area come from Joseph Botter?
From his family.
Uh-huh.
And he was the law here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I heard that.
And he was very strict with his law. And from there on, my father's father was killed. He was shot after an argument.
Oh, yes, I was going to ask you.
And that was before my father was born. He was born just 2 or 3 months later.
I see.
And
who was he killed by?
I don't like to be quoted because I didn't know it until after I was grown.
Oh.
And I wouldn't have known it then, but Adolf and John Palmer came out to our house one day, and we were sitting in the room, and I, you know, fixed coffee, and so John looked kind of funny, and he said, I don't know whether we should drink coffee, whether you know this story. And I said, well, what story? And he says, well, you know, your grandfather was shot by my father. And I said, well, that's news to me. I didn't know anything about it. So then they, you know, began to talk. Of course, then I inquired, and of course the story's kind of, you know.
But actually you can't be responsible for your ancestors.
Yeah, sure,
just like you can't be responsible for what your children are going to
do. That's right. So that was the first I heard of it. And then I asked my dad, and he says, yes. Now, they said it was something else, but my dad said it was had something to do with the nuns and the priest.
Oh, really?
It was a kind of a remark made or something. And my grandfather...